You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the people and ideas behind your favorite online brands. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Cynthia Power, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Cynthia, so you are the director of Eileen Fisher Renew. It's actually a company that has come up oftentimes on the podcast, and I was not super familiar with it, but it usually comes up in the context of sustainability, but it's a women's wear brand, and you're in charge of the Renew program, which is a program where you allow consumers to bring their clothes back to you and turn them into new clothes, resell them, and recycle them in different ways. Is that just a rough description? Does that make sense? How do you describe what you do and maybe Eileen Fisher as a whole?
Yeah, so Eileen Fisher has been around for almost 35 years, and we make high quality, timeless, beautiful, comfortable clothing. So we're starting out with really high quality, very simple pieces. And like you said, yes, our customers bring back their clothes to our stores when they're done with them. And then we take back and resell and reuse them. So what's still in perfectly good condition, we will resell so it can live on as a piece of clothing. And what is damaged, we reuse, remake. I'll talk more about that. But yeah, that's the gist of it.
And you've been with Eileen Fisher for almost 12 years. That's pretty impressive.
Thank you. I always wonder if that's a good thing or a liability, but I'm going with good thing because I'm a one-trick pony a little bit.
Well, what has you? So the company's been around since 1984, but over the past 12 years, what have you seen change at Eileen Fisher?
A lot. I mean, so I started when I was 22. I was like literally a week out of college. I'm very proud of that because I secured a job in April of my senior year of college. And I think when I started at the company, I was one of what felt like, I don't know, five people under the age of 30, which is probably an exaggeration. But I think the company was around 700 people when I started. And there were very few people under the age of 30. And I was 22. So I felt like a baby for sure. And I think one thing that's changed a lot is the company has hired a lot more people, like basically a lot more millennials my age. And so that's, changed the composition of the company. The company has grown quite a bit. We have around 1,200 employees now. I don't remember what our sales were when I started, maybe a few hundred million. Now they're closer to 500 million. The leadership of the company has changed kind of multiple times, and we're going through another big change right now, which is always interesting, and it's a bit tumultuous, but I don't know, never a dull moment, I guess.
What hasn't changed?
I would say for me, what hasn't changed is this feeling of like, I have a lot of people here that I know really well that are kind of like my work family, and that is nice that that feels consistent while things kind of move around us. And I also feel like I can really be myself here, which hasn't changed. And I think that's really, it's a luxury. And it's also like, I don't know, it's just probably why I've stayed for so long is I feel like I can be very casual and not formal and very relaxed in the way that I am. And it works. Like I don't think I would do very well in a very buttoned up environment. And there's a kind of, relaxedness here that I feel like I can just be me, which is awesome.
What drew you to join the company right out of college?
I was looking for companies that I was excited about for whatever reason. And I was looking at women's clothing companies and I thought I wanted to work at this very, I wanted to work very glamorous, like Vogue or, Chanel or something. And then I talked to somebody who worked for Eileen Fisher. I'd never even heard of the company. I had written my thesis about kind of feminism and clothing and how clothing represents women in society. And I was just fascinated. And I was so excited about this company that was all about women, for women, by women, owned by a woman. That was what was exciting to me about it.
Tell me more about your thesis. I'm curious to learn more about that.
Oh, it was fun. I wrote about women's clothing in American Vogue magazine before and after World War II through the specific lens of Chanel and Dior. And kind of looking at like before World War II and, in the early 1900s, like getting rid of the corset and what that meant for women and how showing their bodies in a different way kind of started to change societal expectations of them or challenge societal expectations. And then after World War II, there was this huge like return to kind of corsets and like traditional femininity and women, you know, going back into the home and having children. And how was that all kind of looked at in American Vogue as the years went on?
There's been a lot of movies and documentaries and things about that over the past few years. Are there any that you found striking that resonated with you?
Oh, I mean, I loved the movie Coco Before Chanel with Audrey Tautou.
That's what I was thinking of when you said that.
Yeah, I thought, I love her. And I think that the movie kind of paints, I think, a really interesting picture of just a woman who's willing to challenge kind of societal norms. You know, I think there's a lot of things maybe that we take for granted today, but even just, you know, like she's wearing like men's pajamas and things that are so mainstream today. And I wonder how much of that is really because of her and women like her that were willing to kind of challenge, you know, what women were supposed to look like, you know, 100 years ago. And now it's totally normal for women to walk around wearing the same things that men wear. But yeah.
And did you find that you were able to express some of those ideas that you had from, you know, your thesis and your theories and ideas and what you had studied as you started working at Eileen Fisher?
Definitely. I think one of the reasons I got the job is because I was able to I was able to talk about clothing and femininity and feminism in my interviews. And I think that went over really well with my first boss, who was who's kind of a writer and a feminist herself. And you know, like a thinker and a storyteller. So I think that helped me get my job in the first place. And then I think coming from that perspective, there's a huge openness to that in the company. And even if you look at like our ad campaigns over the years, you know, we'll have very simple taglines like simply to be ourselves and like women together. And just the idea that we try to make very clear and relevant is like, feel good in your body, in your clothes. Like that's all that really matters. Feel good, you know, and you have to look good. You have to look presentable, but you need to feel good first. And to me, that's a really, maybe it's just human, but it also feels really feminist compared to, you know, when I see women, like I have trouble watching women walk in stilettos, and I don't mean to be judgmental. I'm just like, I can't do that. I have to wear sneakers because it feels really good. Or I watch movies where women are in corsets and I just think like, that boggles my mind. And I wonder, would I have been okay with that? Like, would I have just done it? Or would I have been miserable every day? I don't know.
I forget who said this, but there was a good quote, I'm going to botch it, about the footwear industry being all about somehow making men and women's feet seem as different as possible when they're actually the same thing.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I don't know, stilettos. I mean, like, I want to be really careful because I think, you know, the women that love them, and more power to you. I don't understand it. I really don't. And it kind of makes me angry, but I'll stop there.
I kind of agree. I mean, there's something about, I mean, I don't know, this probably has been covered in psychological theories somewhere that I haven't read, but it's about somehow creating a mm-hmm. You cannot run away. You have to be like
right.
This person who is like weakened by your footwear in such a way that you're an object of someone else's like control in a certain
way. Right. And I can hear my friends who wear stilettos being like, I feel stronger when I'm wearing stilettos. So I want to like say that. But yeah, I also just enjoy the act of walking so much that it's my only form of exercise, that I just want to feel my feet on the ground. And I don't think I own any fancy shoes anymore, or like all my fancy shoes look like men's shoes because, yeah, got to have a flat.
It seems like sustainability has been part of the DNA of Eileen Fisher from the start. How did you get exposed to that side of the company, and what were some of your first responsibilities around it?
Yeah, sustainability has been, I think, really embedded in the company from the beginning, and not as sustainability, but just as like, Eileen was really obsessed with just natural fibers from the beginning. Let's just have cotton terry cloth, you know, in a time when there was a lot of, I think, blending and nylon and spandex and all of that. Let's just make a cotton terry cloth box top, you know, I think was a pretty sustainable choice at the time. And over the years, decision-making has really been just like, what's the best small choice we can make now in terms of a highest quality fabric and what feels good against the body and like that. So then it became more official sustainability, you know, probably in the last 10 to 15 years. And in terms of my responsibilities, I mean, it probably started more when I worked for Eileen as her assistant, and it wasn't so much official sustainability responsibilities, but she got really passionate about kind of the official sustainability while I was working for her. And so that was really fun. I got to be really involved with her and our teams that do, you know, oversee environmental sustainability and human rights and work with all of our production. And Eileen, like, we went to China together and I got to go to India, and, you know, just to kind of see a lot of our supply chain was really eye-opening and quite a privilege. And so I think I got involved at that point. And then in terms of like it becoming part of my more official role, when I stopped working for Eileen and before I started working with Renew, I took a year and I kind of project managed the CFTA Social Innovators Project. We granted an award to three recent grads from design schools. They all happened to come from Parsons. And we gave them this challenge that was, you know, we've taken back all these clothes and there's a bunch that we can't resell and we don't know what to do with them. They're damaged clothes. And what should we do with them? So as design graduates, like, please create a capsule collection that kind of fits with Eileen Fisher's, you know, design aesthetic and is made of damaged Eileen Fisher clothing. And so I got to oversee that project for a year, which I think, you know, was definitely sustainability and was moving into, you know, the circular economy and kind of more of how we talk about or the expanding definition of sustainability now. And then after I did that for a year, I moved into to kind of manage the Renew program.
I want to go back to what you were describing with sort of seeing the supply chain firsthand and going to India. What is it that you saw there that, you know, surprised you?
I remember having a really tough, like listening to a tough conversation about wastewater from a dye house.
Yeah.
And where that wastewater goes. And in this case, it was going into like a local water table, which seemed quite unhealthy for the local people. And trying to have a conversation with business owners who didn't necessarily see it as a problem and were even trying to paint it in like a, you know, positive light. And so really trying to listen and be respectful and also not be horrified. And how do you deal with that? How do you work to remediate that, or how do you change that? I mean, that's the first thing that came to mind when you asked that question. You know, big picture, also what surprised me just in traveling to India and China is just first just getting a firsthand taste of a totally other culture and just trying to understand it a little bit and pick up a few words or a few like physical, you know, sign language or whatever to be able to kind of show that you understand and respect where they're coming from and their culture. And that was probably what I enjoyed the most. One of the things that also shocked me about India is we work with some communities that do handloom. It's, you know, all across rural India, you know, I guess it's called cottage industry. You know, people are looming very fine fabrics in their homes. And a lot of times there's dirt floors and there, you know, cobwebs in the corners. And it's like they're making these pristine pieces of cloth in less than pristine environments. And that kind of shocked me for sure. But it was really amazing and a great experience.
Yeah. Before getting involved in all the packaging stuff here at Lumi, me and my business partner ran a company for 5 years that was producing fabric dyes. And we sourced a lot of our pigments from India. And it's just what I like about Eileen Fisher's point of view and messaging around some of these topics is that it's our responsibilities as creators, as manufacturers, to put things in the world that are, you know, hopefully as good as possible. And
yeah,
because the end consumer, when they go to the store and they choose like a blue garment versus a yellow garment, from their perspective, they're making a choice about color or aesthetic. But yeah, they don't necessarily appreciate that maybe one of those, you know, producing indigo in a certain way has a whole set of ramifications that might be different than producing a yellow pigment. And in a way, you know, they're not necessarily going to India and seeing this stuff firsthand, but the people who are producing it kind of have the responsibility to do that and try to do your best to produce something that is going to be, you know, kind to the environment and so on. So I think that point of view of whose responsibility is it, some people kind of say, well, you know, the end consumer, they can do the research, they can figure it out. But I don't think that's really true.
No. Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if they could figure it out, but I don't think it should be on them. I think, like you said, whoever's job is making the product that should be taking responsibility for what they're making. I mean, they're having an impact on, you know, the natural environment. So they need to be responsible about that. And then at the consumer side, you know, sometimes there's a choice, like, do I want to pay premium for organic or not? And then I think, you know, I encourage, and that's how I spend my money. But we have to expect consumers, our, you know, myself included, to pick the thing that is more aesthetically pleasing to them and hopefully also has the values behind it. So I think it's really important when you find companies that like make beautiful things that are very responsible. I love shopping for those companies because you kind of like, you know, they did their homework and you don't have to be so concerned about who made this and how is it made and all of those questions.
So let's go into Renew a little bit. How did that program start? I know that, just to give a little bit of context, that branch, it has its own e-commerce site. You can purchase directly from there. And it's actually producing now millions of dollars in revenue, which is pretty impressive. But I would love for you to describe kind of Renew as a whole and what it is.
Yeah, sure. So that e-commerce site, because I'll kick myself if I don't say it, is EileenFisherRenew.com. And when you say millions of dollars, I can actually give you a statistic. We started the Take Back program in 2009. And through 2018, we have sold over $17 million in resale, in resale alone. We've taken back about 1.2 million garments, Eileen Fisher garments. And we have resold over 400,000 pieces.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that. So Renew, which started in 2009 under the name Green Eileen, it started as like an employee take back program where employees were just giving back their clothes. And we were selling it in one store, in the Lab store in Irvington, New York, and quickly kind of gained a bunch of traction. In 2013, we did a great campaign that we plastered on a lot of our store windows that said, "We'd like our clothes back. Thanks very much." And it was nice, bold and graphic. And that kind of brought on like an onslaught of clothing that we just finished digging out from underneath, 5 years later.
Wow.
And so the program, you know, grew a ton between 2009 and 2018. We now have two Renew stores that are just dedicated to resale, 100% dedicated to resale. We also have Renew product in all of our outlet stores and in select mainline stores, mainline Eileen Fisher stores, I mean. And then we also do, you know, pop-up event sales. And so that's kind of the distribution side. I kind of oversee the program as a whole, and I think about the strategy and the distribution and big picture. And I kind of, you know, work with our leadership stakeholders and make sure that we all know where Renew is going or trying to go, and everyone is on board, and how are we going to get there? That's kind of my role. In terms of how the program works, you know, you can bring an Eileen Fisher garment in any condition back to any Eileen Fisher store in the United States. We'll give you a $5 gift card in exchange for that garment, and it can be in perfect condition and it could be ripped to shreds. As long as it has an Eileen Fisher tag, we'll take it back. We'll give you the $5. Though we have two warehouses, so all those clothes go to one of two warehouses, one in Seattle and one in Irvington, New York, which is where our company headquarters are. And at those warehouses, we have a first sort. There's a lot of sorting involved, as you can imagine. And for anyone who's ever been to like a textile sorting or a textile recycling plant, we have a first sort where we determine, is this good enough to be resold or not? And if it is, then it's dry cleaned and taken to its appropriate kind of inventory holding location. If it's not good enough to be resold, then we have a whole other process where it's categorized, and we have a bunch of cool R&D projects kind of in the works, which I can talk about. But about 55% of what we get back is actually in perfect condition and we can clean and resell. So I think that's also a great testament to the quality of the clothes, that people, you know, can own them for a year or 10 years or 20 years and send them back to us, and they're in perfect condition. So we resell that kind of 55%. And then I'm really excited also, one of the kind of innovations I think that we've been working on and was started out in our Seattle warehouse was a product category called Not Quite Perfect. And it's this idea that after the 55% that we get back that's in perfect condition, there's another, say, 20 or 25% that has a small flaw. It might have like a small hole or a small stain or a snag or something, but it's totally wearable. You may not even notice the flaw. It's what the kind of clothes that most people wear all the time that have some small flaw. And those are actually wearable and sellable as well. So then we have a kind of second category of not quite perfect, where we get, you know, the idea is to keep the clothes in use as long as possible. We used a lot of natural resources to make, you know, to make the clothes in the first place. So they should be used as clothes for as long as they can. Beyond that, you know, additional 20-25%, we, you know, everything beyond that is, we say, too damaged to wear or to be sold. And so we do some donating of stuff that's still wearable but unsellable. And then we do have some R&D projects in the works. The biggest one right now is it is a felting project where we're actually creating new fabric out of old clothes. And we've invested in some great, exciting felting technology. And we're working on applications for home goods and accessories. And it's really exciting and innovative. We also have a program where we're making new clothes out of old clothes. We also have we're working towards recycling our own clothes down to fiber to be put into our new collections. Like we have something on our spring line right now that is, I believe it's 90% Tencel, and then the other 10% is a recycled silk that we took back of our own silk garments that we then had recycled and kind of blended into this Tencel fabric. So I'm really proud of that because I think that will grow more and more. We want to see our damaged clothing become feedstock for our main line.
Yeah, there's probably 12 different threads that I want to explore there. But yeah. I think that, you know, one of the things that I'm hoping to share with people in this conversation is that, you know, the best practices around some of these things haven't really been established. And I think it can be kind of overwhelming for anyone who's looking to bring on more of this, this philosophy into their company. It can be kind of overwhelming. And some companies say, hey, we're too big to do something like this. Or some companies are like, we're too small to do something like this. And mm-hmm. And I think that what I'm interested in, you know, as we explore kind of the operational side of how this works, is just to get your perspective on what are simple things that you can bring into your company that perhaps like bring some of these best practices that you have started to develop. And one of them that I'm curious about is, off the bat, is there anything that you know about the design process of the garments that actually sets them up to be more useful in your part of the renew process?
Let's see. The first thing that came to mind is when garments have zippers and, you know, trimming on them, anything that's not fabric, when you get to the recycling phase, all of that usually has to be removed. So it creates like an extra step in the operational process of reuse. That is the first thing that came to mind.
But that's kind of fascinating because you're describing the complexity of, you know, once something comes back to the sorting facility, they need to be broken down and separated and all these different things. Mm-hmm. Was there ever something that you learned or that the company learned from that sorting process that came back to inform the design process?
Well, yeah, I think what we're trying to get this kind of feedback loop really in good working order, where we're taking things back and we're saying, you know, okay, this t-shirt, we keep seeing this t-shirt and the neckline is, you know, like becoming undone, or this fabric is coming back and it's always pilled in the same area, or this is really valuable information for our design and manufacturing teams. And so one of the things that I think we really owe it to ourselves is to create much more of a best practice and like a regular practice around what is consistent information that we're getting back as we sort through these clothes. I mean, I think one thing specifically, like we have this silk fabric that we make that's actually the silk fabric that's recycled into the the tencel fabric I was describing. We make a lot of it and we get it back and usually it's stained. Like, so what we've learned about this is that it's very rarely ripped or snagged. It's usually a small oil stain that is the reason that somebody brings it back and is no longer wearing it. And while we would love to keep that, you know, in use as a garment, there's very little that we can do to hide the types of stains that these garments come back with. And so that's why it became the candidate to be recycled into this this new fabric, because we couldn't figure out what else to do with it to really hide those stains. So, you know, it's one of the things I think in terms of, I don't know if it's a best practice, but one of the things we're learning is you really have to take every fabric and treat it differently. You know, silk, knit silk comes back with different damages than woven silk, and they're both very usable in different ways in terms of the reuse or the recycling or the next life of that, those garments. You know, we get back cotton t-shirts all the time, and like the main issue with those is that they have armpit stains and there's not a lot you can do, you know, so we're looking at recycling those, you know, into a new woven fabric that can be hopefully like a high percentage of our own recycled material, or can they be felted, or, you know, so we look at each fabric and see what is inherently reusable, you know, how can we reuse it? Woven linen is kind of a miraculous fabric, and it's one of the original fabrics that Eileen had, you know, on the line 30 plus years ago. And it's really proven itself both in, for the main line, you know, we consistently have a lot of woven linen offered for Eileen Fisher. But then also when we get it back for reuse, even if it's damaged, we're still able to cut away the damages and use it in a high percentage of it, either for our felting R&D or for our, what we call resewn collections, where we make new clothes out of old clothes. So it's really interesting to see the value of each fabric through the lens of how do we reuse this?
Does it drive the company overall to try and use fewer fabrics or less colors or, you know, less different styles?
Yeah, I would say we're not there yet. I'm hopeful that it will. So to kind of put that in perspective, like of everything we get back. So like last year, we got back about 200,000 garments. We have uses or like next lives for about 160,000 of those garments. And then there's about 40,000 left in specific fabrics that we still don't know what to do with, because they're mostly stretchy fabrics or like multiple blend fabrics that there isn't a clear, no one's recycling them yet. We're not, you know, we can't figure out how to kind of give them a next useful life. And so my hope is that moving forward, that the company will adjust those fabrics to make them more reusable in the future. But I think we're quite a ways away from that, because then you hit some business like rubs, you know, where like maybe one of our best-selling pieces is made out of a fabric that we don't know how to reuse. So on the business side of it, we're not going to not sell that, you know, garment. It's paying our paychecks. So then on the reuse side of it, I think it's really a creative challenge. It's like, what are we going to do? And we're kind of pounding the pavement, looking for all, you know, any and all recycling opportunities. My team last week met with the shoe recycler, you know, like we have to figure out what to do with all of our stuff. We don't want it to end up in a landfill. I don't really want it to end up in third world thrift markets. I think we should really take responsibility for it and say, well, we made it in the first place. And so we're going to figure out what to do with it at the end in a way that we feel good about.
A term that's been coming up a lot in the fashion industry, but I don't think it really has crossed over into some of the other industries and where we live here in startup land and some of the other podcast episodes that we've done is circular economy and circularity.
Yeah.
And I would love for you to kind of describe that concept and how is that something that you and the team particularly associate with, or do you have your own take on it?
Yeah. You know, loosely, the idea of the circular economy is that, you know, something is made and then reused, you know, it's parts are either reused indefinitely or make their way back into earth-friendly things that can compost, basically. That's how I would kind of phrase it. I think it's, you know, that's a very strict, idealistic goal, which I think some industries can really get there faster than others or could get there at all. I would say for us as a company, we're still trying to figure out, you know, where does the circular economy overlap with sustainability? Obviously, they're very related, but where are we going to put our stake in the ground as it relates to circular? And then I think my team, specifically the Renew team, is super interested in the circular economy, but also I think the circular economy kind of is like a placeholder for like new innovative types of, you know, economy. So the sharing economy, the renting economy, the circular economy, like how can we just, the idea is just keep using the stuff that already exists. That I think is the inspiration that like, these are beautiful clothes that are very high quality fabrics and fibers. Like, why wouldn't we do everything we can to kind of keep them in use as long as possible? In my mind, you know, I'm just looking at how can we give everything a next useful life, whether it's being resold, recycled, turned into new clothing, you know, donated. That's the kind of big challenge right now. And then in the future, you know, as soon as we figure that out, we'll be getting stuff back again, you know, from its somebody, you know, is bringing things back that were already resold or that were, you know, already recycled. And then we're going to have to figure out, okay, we have a new set of challenges and how do we keep those having a next useful life? And you have to kind of also confront, like, there's upcycling and recycling and downcycling. And how do you keep things at the highest value? You know, you don't, if you, mm-hmm. you don't really want to take a bunch of like beautiful silk shirts and use them, like scrap them for insulation. That's not really the best use of a, you know, some beautiful fabric. So, but it might be the best use of like 100 pairs of totally shredded denim jeans that have no other useful life that we can think of, or, you know, for example.
In the circular economy model, you know, after the purchase from the customer, you have to have collection points. And then from collection points, you know, to some sort of sorting facility or recycling, and then wherever that goes to be turned into something else. The thing that obviously with Eileen Fisher, you have the advantage of having a lot of collection mm-hmm. points. Other companies who are maybe primarily online, you have to do that through the mail, or you would have to go to like a Goodwill or some other place to drop that off. I guess I'm curious, is there any way that you've found to make the collection within the Eileen Fisher ecosystem as convenient and as, you know, user-friendly as possible?
Yeah, I mean, so as you noted, you can bring back your Eileen Fisher clothes to any of our approximately 60 United States stores. I think we have a ways to go still in the collection for people that don't have access to one of those stores. Right now, like, you can send your Eileen Fisher garments into one of our warehouses and we'll send you a gift card in return. But I feel like we could make that a lot easier. Like, in my dream, every web order would come with a, you know, a return envelope with postage paid. That's just, you know, when you're ready to send us any of your Eileen Fisher clothes, stick them in here and they'll go straight to one of our warehouses and then you'll get an online gift card for your credit. That would be amazing. You know, we're a ways away from that. Yeah. I mean, I think also people figure out what they want to do with their clothes. There are a lot of savvy women out there that will sell Eileen Fisher on ThredUp or at local consignment stores because it does fetch a good price because the pieces are very timeless and high quality. So I think some women choose to do that and others will choose to kind of seek out the take back program through us because I guess they want the discount or they want to just know that they're being responsible about how their clothes will be, you know, treated for their next purposes.
The facility that Eileen Fisher operates in Irvington is that's where you're spending most of your time, right? The Tiny Factory?
Yeah.
Tell me more about Tiny Factory and give people context for kind of its size and the number of people who work there.
Yeah, sure. So let's see. Tiny Factory is, you could say, the hub of the Renew kind of take back warehouse inventory and R&D. And we have in total, I would say there are less than 30 people working there. It's in the ground floor of a big old building that once was the printing you know, manufacturer for Cosmopolitan magazine. So it's kind of an old funky building with all kinds of twists and turns, but it's in Irvington where Eileen lives, and she wanted this kind of R&D tiny factory to be nearby. Anyways, and so we have the whole take back warehouse area where everything comes in, you know, UPS, and it's 20 boxes every day, and everything gets sorted and everything gets sent out for cleaning or cleaned in house. And then we have our sellable inventory, and then we have our unsellable inventory, which are like gigantic inventories. I mean, well, gigantic contextually, where I'm talking about like 100,000 sellable, 100,000 unsellable.
And so just to be clear, that those 30 people, they're the ones actually sorting through those hundreds of thousands of items?
Yeah. And in terms of the sorting operation, like just the sorting operation, it's probably no more than 10 people.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is incredible. I mean, they sort through a lot, and it is a highly manual process. I think one thing that we are, and the sorting industry is, you know, trying to figure out is how to make it less manual. Because it is like you have to touch every garment at least once. Right. And, you know, the way I think traditionally you think about manufacturing is like you want to touch it as little as possible because, touching is time and time is money. And so, you know, we have the first sort and we have the second sort and we have a third sort. And that is a little bit problematic in terms of money and labor and resources.
But it seems like an area where right now there's so much research happening around computer vision and stuff that it seems like maybe those two worlds will cross over soon.
Yes, that is definitely the hope. And, you know, like there's, I've heard about kind of like X-ray computers that can tell you exactly what the fabric composition is of something, or fiber composition, you know, or things like that, where it could do some sorting itself, which would be amazing. But for now, it really is this highly manual process, which I also want to say in the whole resale business and reuse business, like, I think there's something really beautiful about the labor, the relation to labor, because if you're not using new, like virgin material from the earth, that's great. What you are using is labor. And while you don't want to have things cost prohibitively amount of labor or amount of dollars, I think it's also really cool that what you're doing is kind of creating jobs. Like you're not taking resources out of the earth, but you are providing work to be done. And I do think this will be like a hugely growing industry for jobs, going forward.
I live here in Los Angeles about, you know, a mile down the street from the old American Apparel factory, which has now been turned into a mall, which is interesting. But there were something like, I think, 5,000 or plus people working there, sewers, basically. And when the factory shut down, we actually had Iris Alonso, who is the old creative director at American Apparel, on the podcast, one of our early episodes about sustainability. She, you know, expressed kind of just the sadness of like all those people. Many of them had to go and take jobs at McDonald's or different places where their skills that they had built over the course of, you know, 30, 40 years were just not being used, and that there wasn't a new generation of people being, you know, trained on these very specific skills. And so I definitely agree with that. I think that there's an important component there.
Yeah, I mean, resale in terms of trends and forecasting for resale, it's supposed to grow, you know, faster than brick and mortar retail, which I guess isn't hard to do. But like, it's supposed to become, you know, a really larger and larger part of the economy. And so with resale, you have all of the sorting and all those types of facilities that I think will continue to grow and hopefully will continue to add jobs. And then you have reuse where you have, you know, design. I think I see more and more designers. I don't know if you've heard of Zero Waste Daniel, but he's a great example of somebody who's creating new product out of either pre or post consumer waste. You know, there's a lot of passion, I think, for younger designers of, again, how do I make something beautiful without taxing the earth's limited resources?
You bring up a good point, which is that where are your inspirations? What are you looking out at the world for? Who are you thinking about or reaching out to when you're trying to figure these things out? Because like we were talking about before, there isn't necessarily best practices. And so that you kind of have to invent it as you go along.
Yeah, which is part of the great part. I think a lot of people that are attracted to working in this part of the company are people that are comfortable with uncertainty and excited about making new things. In terms of reaching out, you know, like we have a great community. One thing that I love about the Eileen Fisher Company is that we've had, I think for a long time, there's just been this attitude of like, we're not competing with other people, you know, like we make what we make and we're proud of it. And we can, you know, let's talk about what we do and how we do it. And can we share with others? And I think we're benefiting from that in Renew because we're able to go like, all right, for example, I was describing, you know, this certain amount of clothing that we get back that we aren't reselling and we do not have any solutions like design or recycling solutions for it. So we recently just started reaching out to all of our partners and like including, you know, I reached out to the Brooklyn Fashion Design Accelerator to ask them, you know, do you have any ideas about what we should do with this? And we reach out to like fellow design companies and we reach out to textile recyclers and we're reaching out to the mills that we work with. And we're just saying like, does anyone have an idea? Do you want this stuff? Are you going to do something cool with it? Or what should we do with it? And it is really exciting. And like little by little, I feel like we're chipping away at like, okay, this person had an idea about what we could do with this specific fabric. And then, all right, so like we'll take that away from the pie that's left. And like, what else do we have to figure out? And it is really inventing things as we go. And I think there's also technology and, you know, machinery that's like being built now that, you know, like a lot of chemical recycling for fiber and fabric is starting to become available, but it's still taking, I think, longer than I imagined and I think others imagined. So, but that is happening. And you have companies like H&M that are investing in that kind of chemical recycling that I think will be a big answer for big companies that are making like H&M who are making, you know, millions of the same cotton poly t-shirt or whatever. If they can take that back and create a new fabric out of that eventually at scale and, you know, for in a profitable way, I think that's the dream where we're not, you know, having to like grow all that cotton and use all new inputs.
One thing that comes to mind when you're describing this is I found it really inspirational that Tesla, the electric car company, opened up all their patents for how to make an electric car. And because their stated mission as a company is like, we want to get the world towards renewable energy.
Yeah.
And so that's a world project. Like everybody Absolutely. Needs to work on that together. So the more we can share these approaches and like allow different companies to use methods that have been, you know, developed to solve some of these problems, the better. And, you know, we're talking about computer vision or different technologies around, you know, making garments, dyeing garments. I feel like this is the stuff where I think, you know, I wish we would see like more industry collaboration or sharing of that information. Are there companies that you look to that you think are doing a great job with that?
Well, I mean, I think because Patagonia has, you know, their worn wear program, we have a nice kind of back and forth where if I'm trying to figure something out, like I'll reach out to them and they'll share whatever they can. And then hopefully vice versa, if they ever have the same question or a question for us, then we'll try to help answer. We have another partner as a mill partner and called Halitex. And they're like really interested in helping us create new fabrics out of our old fabrics. And that's really exciting because I think what I'm looking for companies that are excited about trying new things and are excited about experimenting and saying like, oh, we've never done that with like a cotton poly blend, but let's try, you know, as opposed to there's, I think, a much greater number of companies who seem not that interested. You know, they're like they're doing business fine the way they're doing it. But I think you come across people and companies once in a while who are like, yeah, let's try to figure this out together and we'll probably fail a few times and maybe we'll get somewhere that actually create some progress. So that's really exciting. I wish I could think of more because I think there are more people in this space doing this. I'm just honestly drawing a blank.
Well, we can add links later if you come up with other ideas, but also it kind of highlights the problem, right?
Yeah,
because I think it's something where everyone who's participating in that, I think kind of to the point of like responsibility to the consumer, there's also responsibility to the industry and I think that it's an area that I think there's so much work to be done.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, you're making me think about like, there's all of these organizations that have kind of popped up or some of them are, you know, around longer than others, but that are trying to create, you know, like the circular economy working groups and there's all these conferences on the circular economy. And I feel like everyone is like talking about this and trying to figure it out together. You know, I do think that H&M, I think because of their financial picture, you know, how big they are, like they're able to throw a lot of financial resources at the chemical recycling, which is, you know, really needed. Yeah.
I think that the conversation over the past few years, consumer facing, has gotten to a really good place where I think that we now have a general awareness that we should be shopping, at least here in the United States, in a more conscious way. I think there, at least that bug is starting to spread, right? But I hope that it doesn't go down a path where companies start to feel like sustainability becomes a competitive advantage necessarily. Like that, I mean, it would be great if they're pushing in that direction, but I think it's such an important thing for all of us to work on that I hope that, you know, initiatives that allow for more sustainability don't become this like secret, you know, that is something that allows your company to do something better than another company. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I totally agree with you. And, you know, I think I would say I feel like Eileen Fisher is a 90% open book. And there's a few places where we need to be better about that. Yeah, it's just bringing up for me, like, I think it's really important that sustainability is not a competitive advantage. I totally agree. And we should all be getting there, you know, together and sharing everything that we know and have figured out along the way. And yeah, absolutely.
If you were talking to someone who's starting a startup today and they're, you know, a 5 or 10 person team and they're designing garments, starting to make things, what would you tell them about processes that they could implement at that scale that would allow for more circularity or any improvements in their the sustainability of their supply chain?
Well, one thing that comes to mind just as a link that you could share is IDEO, I believe, shared, like, they open sourced their designed for circularity principles or something, or like it's like a guidebook and you can look at all, you know, their kind of guidelines, which is really great. But I would say for somebody starting out small, you know, the kinds of questions I guess I would ask are, you know, how durable is the product that you're making? I would lean towards make it more durable. And like, where is the value in your product? Meaning like, are you making, you know, 100% organic linen? Then your fabric will continue to be valuable even in its reuse phase. Whereas if you're using right now, you know, if you're using like a really kind of inexpensive, say like cotton poly blend, probably not as valuable, at least right now. So where is the value in your product? And are you making it in a way that that value can be recouped? So for us, you know, when we make wide leg linen trousers, we get those back. And if we can't resell them, like we cut them up and they're still actually pretty big pieces of fabric that we can then use to remake. Kind of an example of what I mean by value. I think any type of company, whether it's clothing or not, like I just think about, look at where the value is and what you're making. And are you making it in a way that it will be easy to take it back? Are you making it easy for your customer to bring it back? And then how will you be able to continue to get value out of those pieces that you're making?
As we wrap up, I would love for you to touch on what Eileen Fisher on a broader level is doing. There's a big initiative called Vision 2020 that was announced last year. Can you give us some of the highlights of that and maybe where people can go to learn more about what's going on there?
Sure. Yeah. So Vision 2020, I think it's been around for a few years. And basically the idea is we're trying to get to as close as we can to 100% sustainability by 2020. And so I don't think we've done a great job marketing that. I think there's kind of a misconception that we were trying to become 100% sustainable by 2020, which is not going to happen. But we made a bunch of great goals for ourselves. So I'm actually, if you go to the eileenfisher.com website and you go behind the label, you can look at Vision 2020. And we had goals like to have 100% cotton and 100% linen be organic by 2020. Our core merinos will get an ethical makeover. We'll use wool from sheep that are responsibly raised. So we have fiber goals. We have color, so dye house goals. We have goals around resources. We have goals around people and supply chain and reuse. So you can kind of look at all of those on our website. And I think we're really, you know, proud. We've made a lot of progress in the last few years. And it's so helpful when you set, you know, a concrete goal for yourself, you know, just how much closer you'll get to it if you're really specific. And then now we're starting to think about, okay, beyond 2020, you know, what is the impact we want to have, and where do we still need to make, you know, significant improvement? And I think reuse and resale will become a bigger part of the company's kind of bottom line, and a bigger part of the commitment to sustainability, and a bigger part of the way we measure the good that we're doing.
Yeah. And I think going back to what we were talking about of kind of opening up what different companies are doing, I think opening up your goals is a great way to do that too, because it sort of helps create some sort of framework, both internally, you know, how your energy and resources and priorities are being organized, and then externally helping, you know, customers and maybe the rest of the industry understand, hey, here's a project that we can work towards that's like relatively concrete. So that's really exciting. And we'll put a link in the show notes so that people can learn more. Is there anything else you want to point people to if they're interested in learning more about Renew and Eileen Fisher? There's the link you mentioned at the beginning, but yeah.
Yeah, I would say, you know, check out EileenFisherRenew.com. And we're doing a pop-up for the month of April in a number of our Eileen Fisher retail stores. And so actually you'll be able to shop. Denver, Pasadena, LA. If you go to Eileen Fisher Renew and go to events, you can see which Eileen Fisher stores will be hosting little Renew pop-ups. And we're going to have a great Indigo sale on Eileen Fisher Renew and in our Seattle store coming up. So sorry, my brain is rapidly turning into mud. But yeah.
But all of those things are on EileenFisherRenew.com. And there's also wonderful photographs of the factory and kind of the behind the scenes of how it all works. So I really highly recommend that people take a look at that and discover it.
Oh, that's a good reminder. We have monthly tours in our factories also, in our tiny factory. You can also reach out to customer service and we can connect, you know, give you those times and make sure that you come and see the factory if that's what you'd like to do, any of you listening.
That's awesome. Irvington, I don't actually know exactly where that is.
It's about an hour north of the city, and it's really easy to get to on in the train on the Metro North. So it's about an hour and walkable from the train station, so not too bad.
I will definitely come check it out next time in New York.
Please do.
Thank you so much. This has been really informative and inspirational. I love what you're doing, and I'm really excited to see where it goes, especially as you work your way towards some of these bigger goals. And it would be awesome to check in with you in a year or two and see how far things have come.
Yeah, please do. It'll keep me honest. Keep moving forward.
That's awesome. Thank you, Cynthia.
Thank you very much.
Ooh, one last thing before we go. I'm talking to you at home. What's your favorite brand these days? Is there something that you think is really well made? Or maybe someone that you'd love for me to talk to? Send us a tweet. We are at Lumi, L-U-M-I, on Twitter. We're making this show for you, so tell us what you want to hear, and we'll make it happen. Thanks. See you next time.